NASA 557, contact tower 128.15.
Caution, caution. Manual, fuel, manual, fuel.
I'm John Golia.
I'm Greg Fife.
And I'm Todd Curtis.
And we are the Flight Safety Detectives.
Between us, we have over a century of aviation accident investigation and safety experience to draw on as we discuss issues that affect all of us.
So we are qualified to share our perspectives on accidents and incidents and what can be learned from them for the future.
We're proud to say that we have two sponsors that really relate to the topic of aviation safety: the Professional Aviation Maintenance Association, or PAMA, and Avemco Insurance. Later on in the show, we'll tell you how you can get a 5% discount on your insurance just for listening to the show.
We don't just dissect the official reports. In every episode, we identify safety issues and take the mystery out of accident investigations.
So maybe pilots and their planes can have safer flights ahead.
Well, hello, Todd.
Hello there, John.
How are you today?
I'm doing just fine here on a fine, almost summer day.
It's a beautiful day in New England. So, no, we got two coasts working. The right coast and the left coast.
And this past week, the left coast didn't have many storms, but the Midwest and the right coast had all kinds of stuff going on. I mean, tornadoes and whatnot, you see that on the news. But, of course, today we're more concerned with not the very dramatic thunderstorm-related or squall line-related turbulence, but the kind of turbulence that happens all the time, especially the kind that attracts attention, like what happened with Singapore Airlines in May of 2024, where for the first time in 24 years, as a matter of fact, they had a passenger fatality on one of their flights.
Yeah, we've had a lot of people hurt, some serious, and some paralyzed, actually. Through the years, usually it's over that the Northwest Pacific between Alaska and China and Russia, where there's that air over there is very often quite turbulent. And most people don't know that there's two sections of highly traveled airspace that there's no radar coverage, and it's the North Atlantic and the North Pacific, and of course down at the equator too. Remember the Air France misadventure we had coming out of Brazil, right around the equator. And there's always turbulence in those areas because of the weather phenomenon. You know, the equator, everything's the opposite south of the equator, so you've got conflict with weather patterns around the equator. So there's a lot of things entering into the picture on turbulence. And you know, in my career at the NTSB, we have a number of them in the North Pacific where people would slam up against the overhead because they weren't secured. It's bad enough that all the goods and things that we bring with us on the airplane, and I'm guilty of that as probably more than most, because I fly so much and I get so much work done while I'm flying that I got the computer out. I might have my iPad out with the computer. And I might have a whole bunch of documents as well. And good bounce and clear air turbulence, all that stuff is going to go flying. And clear air turbulence is unpredictable. Well, I shouldn't say it that way. It usually comes on quickly before the pilots can have a chance to tell you. Although with the pilot reports and so much traffic in front of you, sometimes you can a pilot in front of you will tell you that he's gotten severe turbulence, and you can race everybody behind if you're a couple minutes behind them.
The thing about turbulence that makes it difficult sometimes is that although some kinds of turbulent conditions are quite predictable, if you're going to fly in or near a thunderstorm, or if you have to fly in or near a thunderstorm, then you know that you're going to be in for a rough ride. And if you're in an airliner, they're near any kind of severe weather. Of course, they'll avoid going through the worst of it, but sometimes you have to go through some part of it. They'll tell you ahead of time, you know, we're going to stop any beverage service. Everybody go to your seats. Flight attendants also strap in.
And I know that from US Air days, a number of flight attendants were pretty badly injured broken bones, a fracture, hairline fractures sometimes, which take forever to heal because of it. And of course, nobody wants to see that beverage cart that's loaded with a couple hundred pounds of cans of Coke and whatever flying around the cabin. And I have seen airplanes that have had that happen. So commercial airplanes go to great lengths to avoid it. NOAA has a system for identifying which the airline dispatching crews routinely check with today to see what NOAA has for turbulence. And like I said before, the pilot reports for turbulence since on some of the routes across the country, across the oceans, are like a wagon train. You leave JFK going to London, there's usually two or three airplanes leaving about the same time. And you're going to join up with the ones from Boston and Philadelphia. And there's a great big Congo line going from the eastern United States over to Europe. So you're going to get situation reports from those pilots all along the way. They're not the best, but at least it's an indication of something happening in front of you, and you have a little bit of time to address it, get your people down, get the flight attendants down, whatever is appropriate. So
And
we
this
have that. But we also have the issue with general aviation pilots. Well, before we go to the general aviation pilots, let's talk a little bit about what passengers can do on a commercial airline to protect themselves.
it's a common sense thing. I mean, most of the problems when it comes to turbulence is things are not tied down flying around the cabin. And the bottom line, if you're in the seat and you don't have to get up for some reason, keep the seat belt on. I'm not saying it. Put it tight to cut off circulation, but put it on so that if something did happen, you would be pretty much in your seat area. This is especially true if you're trying to take a nap because, you're going to be surprised one way or the other if you have a sudden clear turbulence event. You'll be even more surprised if you're sleeping because you won't have any warning before you're jolted awake by the big jolt. If you have that seat belt on, it's a protective measure. A very basic protective measure and a very effective protective measure.
I actually was in an airplane coming into Boston, actually, many years ago. And we hit a pretty good spot of turbulence. The airplane dropped considerably. Now, I had my seatbelt on tight because I never loosen them up. And the woman sitting across the aisle from me had her belt on loosely. So I stretched up against the belt, but I didn't move very much at all. It was a little vertical, nothing horizontal. She bounced around a little bit, but she didn't hit the ceiling, the passenger service unit above her. So thankfully, her seatbelt was on the airplane, didn't have a lot of people in it. So she was quite shaken up,
Right.
but no physical injuries. But if you don't have that seatbelt on when that happens, you're going to slam into the ceiling. And then almost always you're going to slam down and you're going to hit the seats, the floor, or other passengers. You become the UFO in the cabin, along with all the debris, the computers that people had out working on, their phones if they had them out, and all that stuff's flying around. And you get hit with that, you can get hurt there too.
And a special note to the families with young children out there. Yes, I know it's difficult to keep your child in one place. Yes, they're squirming all around sometimes, and that's just the way it is with children. As much as you can, keep them under control, generally under control, and belted in either in a carrier for the seat they're in, or if they're large enough, just a regular seat belt. And again, it's tough, especially on long trips with children, but you have to do what you have to do, and keeping them in that belted position is the best thing for you, for them as well.
In fact, Greg is co-inventor of a harness for small kids on the airplanes that are too big for the car carrier, the type of seat that they use. So it provides additional rigidity to keep them in position. So yes, there's a number of things you can do. You have to pay attention and you have to really think about it. But now let's take this discussion down to the general aviation pilot. All right, so you've been trying to transition back into the pilot seat, and in your instruction, has anybody enlightened you on what you should be doing?
Well, one of the enlightenments happens in full color in 3D in real time. That is, if I'm flying and there's, turbulent air, not turbulence in the sense of you're 30,000 feet in an airliner, but there's all sorts of turbulent air that happens lower down. And in some conditions, some situations, one of the basic things you can do is turn off the autopilot. In fact, that's what the recommendation is. If you have moderate chop or, something that the airplane is controllable, but it's bouncing all over the place, then taking it out of autopilot and changing the speed to one that's perhaps not your usual cruising speed are two things you can do to deal with it better. And again, it's a little scary, but with some practice, even if you're bounced around a little bit, even if you're, going off at a bit of an angle, correcting for that sort of situation is not something that takes extraordinary pilot skill. It just takes experience. Now, one of the things that I always struggled with is why do they call the things they call them? So I looked up in my one of my favorite references, the pilot controller glossary, which is a sort of standard terminology that pilots and controllers should be using to describe what's going on. And they have a, okay, somewhat clinical way of describing turbulence, an atmospheric phenomenon that causes changes in aircraft attitude, altitude, or airspeed with aircraft reaction depending on intensity. Pilots report turbulence intensity according to the aircraft's reaction as follows. Light causes slight erratic changes in altitude and or altitude, attitude rather, pitch, roll, or yaw. Moderate, similar to light, but of greater intensity. Changes in altitude and or altitude occur, but the aircraft remains in positive control at all times. It usually causes variations in indicated airspeed. Personally, it causes variations in my willingness to keep flying. If I know it's going to be that kind of turbulence going on out there, I typically don't fly. If I hear that the weather's deteriorating so that it's very likely going to be turbulent conditions, as well as crosswinds, another reason for me to change my flight plan. Now, here are two kinds of turbulence I've never experienced myself, either as a passenger or flying. Severe causes large, abrupt changes in altitude or attitude. Usually causes large variations in indicated airspeed. Aircraft may be momentarily out of control. Again, this is a situation where if you are in it, one of the smartest things you can do is do what's necessary to get out of it. One of the classic situations is you accidentally fly into an area where there is, some kind of convective activity, thunderstorm, what have you, and you start experiencing these kinds of things. Best thing to do is to make a slow 180 to get out of there. And also, if you're, in my case, if I'm experiencing anything other than light turbulence, I'm going to keep it off the autopilot. I'm going to fly that aircraft manually and not rely on the autopilot to keep me nice and level, because again, that's one of the recommended things that my instructor says to do, and I agree with it. The last level, which I've never experienced, and if you do experience it and survive, please call us. We'd like to talk to you. Extreme. The aircraft is violently tossed about and it is practically impossible to control. It may cause structural damage.
And we've had a few f famous people get caught in level 5 thunderstorms where the airplane actually had broken apart. So in the accident reports in the NTSB files, they're not common, but there's many of them in there over the years where the airplane broke up in severe turbulence, but usually associated with a thunderstorm or some kind of a storm.
And how
So it's
do very experienced pilots in some cases get into this situation? I think a couple of years ago, we did a show about Scott Crossfield, who's a famous test pilot from the 1950s, tens of thousands of hours of experience. And he was a solo IFR in a small single engine aircraft and went into a storm situation where he had, weather information that there was activity ahead, but he still went into it. And, it was more than he could handle, more than anybody can handle, probably.
A couple of events and a couple of pieces that led up to that event. The air traffic controllers didn't tell them the severity of the storm, and I, if I remember right, they could see it on their screen, but they were busy with a whole bunch of other things, and they didn't bring it to his attention. And he had what we believe was get-home-itis, because it was I believe it was his wedding anniversary, but it could have been his wife's birthday. But there's some event that he was trying to make. So he was going to charge through. If he knew it was a level 5 thunderstorm, he wouldn't have done that. But he knew it was a thunderstorm. But, you know, he must have been using information that didn't have it properly assessed. And he tried to go through it, or skirt it, and got caught up, and it broke his airplane up. Not the first time that's happened.
And another thing about flying in the modern era, the early 21st century, as opposed to the late 20th century when I started to fly, the level of information that is available for the average and below average pilot is way better than it used to be. Just because there's more information doesn't mean it's going to be enough for you to avoid situations, because you have to think ahead. For example, you have a weather forecast, maybe regularly updated. It's all very fine and good, but it's a forecast. It's based on what happened in the past. It's estimates by experts and by computers and whatnot of what's going to happen in the future. Not a guarantee you will or will not experience this. Pilot reports, a similar sort of thing, in that when the pilot reports do come in, they could pop up in the systems that you use, like ForeFlight. Yes, there's been a pilot report in this place or that place. Again, those pilot reports are things that happened in the past for a particular aircraft at a particular altitude. And if you read some of the pilot reports, and for those watching the video version of this, I'm going to show you an example from the Aviation Weather Center from NOAA that gives detailed information. Or even if they break down in plain English where this was, the time, the place, the type of aircraft, you have to use some judgment. If you see a pilot report or hear a pilot report from an airplane that is bigger than yours, more complex than yours, flying at a different altitude from what you're flying, their experience may not be your experience. And also, if the pilot report happened 10, 15 minutes ago, whatever circumstance happened 10 or 15 minutes ago may not be present at all in that area. It may have moved, may have dissipated, may have gotten worse, but it's going to change.
Yes. You know, it gets to what I say at the end of every show about pre-planning and checking the weather here, there, and everywhere in between, because it does change. And, you know, something that's not so concerning can turn into something very concerning in a relatively short period of time, especially in some areas of the country. You know, this time of the year, we're about moving into thunderstorm time in the south of the United States. You know, and you haven't lived until you get through some of those thunderstorms in the Carolinas and Georgia, northern Florida. They're quite interesting to get caught into those. You know, and the same thing in Oklahoma. I mean, tornadoes. You're flying out there and there's storms around and not much of anything, and then all of a sudden you're dodging a tornado. I mean, they come up pretty quick, so you need to really pay attention as a GA pilot, and you need to keep, you need to bring some of that technology into the airplane with you. You know, I mean, I see more and more pilots coming to getting in their cockpit with their iPads and their Sirius weather. You know, so there's a lot of technology that available to us today that wasn't there 20 years ago.
And the technology can be a help. It can be a hindrance, in that even if you have all the latest and greatest technology, and yes, I have my ForeFlight, I take it up in my G1000 airplane, and I have access to all sorts of information. But looking out the windscreen, seeing what's out there, if you see weather approaching, and it's somewhat in the area where you want to fly or where you're going, don't think that, oh, yes, I'm fast enough to outrun it, or it seems to be far away. If you can see it, it's probably closer than you want it to be. Take the appropriate action, whether it's, you know, land immediately or land as soon as practical, alter your route, or if you're, you know, at the airport and you're about to take off and you see something approaching, wait a while. You know, you'd rather wait on the ground for something to pass by than be up in the air hoping that it passes by.
Right. But there's so many of our GA pilots that don't heed that kind of advice. I see them all the time. You know, I see them. Not long ago, there was here in New England, there was a pretty good rainstorm. And I see a young guy run out to his airplane, you know, takes refuge under the wing, high wing airplane, takes refuge from the rain and climbs in. He didn't do a walk around. He climbed into the airplane, started it up, and the rain let up a little bit, and he took off. Now, I'm sure he was bouncing all over the place. He had to get somewhere. Obviously, he had to get somewhere, and he was going to go. Well, that's not the smartest thing.
If you have two choices, one choice you can make your meeting, the other choice you can meet your maker. Think about it. Which
Yeah.
one's more important?
That's a good point. It's a good point. Yeah. And too many people don't take the right choice. Yeah, gotta go, gotta go. That's self-imposed pressure. We all do it to ourselves all the time. And having the ability to just say no to all of that is very, very hard.
And I'd like to speak to again to passengers and airliners again for a minute. Again, every once in a great while, turbulence comes to the forefront in the media. And it happened this past week or so for us with the Singapore event. In fact, I saw a video online that was shot by one of the passengers inside the airplane. Apparently, they began shooting it shortly after this encounter began. But during the time they were filming, there was somebody in the aisle and people were acting as though they were trying to get their seatbelts on. Another bump hit, you saw a person get slammed to the ceiling and then get slammed down again. I don't believe it was a gentleman who died. Apparently, it was like a 78-year-old person who died of a heart attack. It seemed to be a younger person being thrown to the ceiling. But again, that is something where 10 or 15 years ago, you wouldn't have seen it for a couple of reasons. No one would have been having, you wouldn't have 500 phones on a flight with 300 people. And we didn't have social media like we do. Fortunately, and unfortunately, we have it now where an event like this happens, and you're going to get almost within a couple hours of the airplane landing, all sorts of things being loaded up onto the internet. Some of them are dramatic and useful to look at because it gives you insight. Some of it isn't, but still, this can't be hidden. Now, on the other hand, it is still something that does not get reported that frequently. In the course of working for a couple of clients, I literally go through all kinds of incident reports every year around the world. And there are all kinds of turbulence injuries that happen. Usually, one or two happen to the flight attendants, the cabin attendants, and doesn't get reported. Very rarely do you get one that hits about 15 or 20, but it was so frequent. I told one client, look, I'm not going to write up anything where only one person got seriously injured. It has to be at least two. And when that serious injury happens on an airplane over the Pacific somewhere in a country that's not connected to major media centers or a flight not connected to major media centers, it will escape the notice of all but the people inside the aviation world. On rare occasions, you have a Singapore type event where everybody in the world hears about it within a day.
Yeah, we've had a number on China Airlines because they fly that Northern Pacific route. Some U.S. charter companies like Evergreen have had a pretty severe one in the North Pacific. Northwest, I believe, had one. It's very common. And again, many of those didn't make a big splash in the paper. It's because we're aviation insiders. We live and breathe everything that happens in aviation. We see something that most people would overlook. We'd go digging in to see what it was. Because there are little safety nuggets and all of that stuff
If a
that
dozen people
sometimes.
get injured in a flight, flying over Argentina, it lands in Buenos Aires, you won't hear about it. If it happens on a flight going to London or Paris or New York, you're going to hear about it.
Yeah. Well, I imagine there's a lot of that flying between Chile and Argentina over the mountains, over the Andes. We have it here in the Rockies. A ton of GA airplanes get beat up over the Rockies. Mountain waves, that wind current that comes off the mountains. I remember the United Airlines airplane that the NTSB at the time thought it was a mountain wave that upset the airplane because they're that strong. It wasn't. It turned out that it was the rudder power control unit. But anyway, those mountain waves can be rather severe. Greg can tell you stories about those all the time. In fact, I've been out there and he's wanted to fly when it was windy, and I'm saying, you know what? Let's not do that.
So the takeaway for the audience out there, whether you are an expert pilot, professional pilot, a GA pilot with experience, but not like an airline pilot or a passenger, turbulence affects everybody. What you can do about it varies greatly with a airline passenger. Basic stuff like keeping your seatbelt on is the smartest thing to do, because no matter what airline you're flying on, no matter how small that airline, the pilots and their dispatchers and the air traffic controllers are professionals. They will do their utmost to keep that aircraft out of trouble. Now, when it comes to GA flying, whether you're flying with someone else or you're the person who's flying, your experience is such where you might be confident that you can fly. It doesn't mean that you're competent to evaluate the risk of novel situations you've never seen before. Just because you've read, oh, and it says light turbulence here, yes, it might be absolutely true right then. But by the time you get there, it may not be light. And so if you make a plan, the plan might not be, it's going to be no more than light turbulence, I can go. The plan should be, let's take a step back, do a little bit broader look here, see if there are other things here that I can find that give me pause, that give me insights as to what I should or should not do, and make a decision. Do I go right now? Do I go later? Do I say the heck with it and rent a car or go to the airport and buy a commercial flight?
Yeah, too many pilots take the weather conditions, not serious enough, and make the assumption that when I look at it, when I'm at my departing airport, it's not going to change between now and when I get to the arrival airport.
And
Because weather is dynamic and changes instantly.
if you come across a situation that was a little bit outside of your experience level, but you survived it, no damage, you weren't late for your appointment or whatnot, it's not an opportunity for you to say to yourself, ha, maybe it's not as bad as I thought, or ha, I got lucky this time. Okay, it's a wake-up call. Yes, good thing you survived, good thing the airplane is one piece. Take stock of the situation. What would you have done differently, knowing what you know afterwards? What could you have done in planning in general that would put you in a situation where you might not even be at the step of we're about to go fly because you would have made a decision hours or even days before not to do that flight?
Again, put your head on very sensitive, your antenna on very sensitive when you're flying in and around weather conditions.
Now, this wasn't a turbulence per se. This was a high crosswind situation. Driving to the airport to go take a flight with my instructor, and I drive by the departure end of the runway. The windsock is going at a 90-degree angle, standing out stiff. I'm thinking to myself, I don't see a numerical value to that. However, I think it's above my crosswind limit. I'm staying on the ground today.
Good choice. All right. Last word.
Last word. Hey, whenever you see something in the news about aviation that scares you or gives you, makes you wonder, wow, can that happen to me? The answer is yes. Now, what do you do with that answer? What can you do about it? What can you personally do about it to either prevent it from happening in the first place, make it less likely to happen, or if it does happen, the outcome will be not as bad as if you'd done nothing, which is basic risk assessment.
Yes. And I'll say what I always say. If you're going to go flying, do a good session of pre-planning, one before you get to the airport, do it again at the airport. If they're different, find out why. Dig into it a little bit. Get out to the airplane, do a good pre-flight. I still see people over and over and over that don't do pre-flights. I was at the airport this weekend, right? And I saw one out of about 25. But I did see one. He never did a pre-flight at all. Looked at the airplane from afar. Not the thing, not the way to do it. And it was an older guy. They obviously had a bunch of time given the gear that he had with them. But that's no excuse. And after you get in the air, put that head on a swivel. I just gave a presentation down at Embry-Riddle. And I said that to a bunch of student pilots that are flying down there. And man, the stories that came back to me about incidents that have occurred with them. They're not NASA reports. They're not, by definition, the FAA's close calls. But these students were telling me, there must have been clearly over a dozen of them that have had close encounters of the wrong kind. in flying in an area with a lot of students. So, and today there's a lot of students everywhere. So you need to pay attention and put that head on a swivel. You don't want to be involved in somebody else's accident. So put your head on a swivel so you can see it coming and get out of the way. And if you do fly, please fly safely.
Thank you for checking out our show. We really value our listeners and subscribers. Our podcast gets ranked by you and how much you like it. So please give us 5 stars in your podcast platform.
We want to keep in contact with you. We are on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and of course, YouTube.
You can email the show at flightsafetydetectives@gmail.com. By the way, if you're on YouTube, we're really working on growing the channel, and it helps if you all send in comments. Please do that, and we read all the comments.
And be sure to subscribe. Remember, if you're in the market for aviation insurance, you can save 5% with Avemco just by mentioning our show. Visit them at www.avemco.com. That's it for this episode of the Flight Safety Detective. Until the next episode, fly safe.